Tompkins about the infamous Battle of L.A. Infamous, I guess, to Americans. Most people in the world probably have never heard about it. It's a remarkable event, and again, one of the most widely viewed UFO encounters ever. And plus, it had the American military with airplanes aloft firing at this thing or these things. And it had, again, ground batteries, anti-aircraft batteries scattered around L.A., and ships anchored at port, all firing at this thing. So quite remarkable. Bill, go ahead.
To say that it's hard for some of you folks out there listening to this to realize that mind control is a big thing in the whole subject that we're talking about here. And what happened here was that different people saw the same thing, and their minds painted different pictures.
Uh-huh.
And so, like my dad being a part-time block warden for our area there in our neighborhood, mm-hmm. he spent the next day and then the Saturday and Sunday after this and talked to everybody in the area around where we were, and then mm-hmm. also with business people too.
Mm-hmm.
So he got all different versions of the same thing. And the three of us discussed the different versions for weeks afterwards. Why did different people mm-hmm. that he talked to in the same area
mm-hmm.
see and understand a different version?
Do you remember what some of the other, Bill, what were some of the other versions? What were the differences? What were the discrepancies?
The biggest discrepancy was in numbers of vehicles.
Uh-huh.
The three of us saw hundreds. I mean, we were seeing like what would be hundreds of vehicles over what we saw would have been 5 or 6 hours, except we slept for the last half of that. But how could this thing continue? Vehicles coming over, and we keep shooting at them, and they're not the same vehicle. Why so many of them? And it didn't make any sense to us. And, of course, none of them got shot down as far as we knew. Later on, we also found out that two of the small ones, one of them went down past Mount Wilson on the other the east side.
Yeah.
And then the other one, the Navy, picked up just a quarter of a mile off the breakwater in shallow water. And so, incidentally, that's interesting, too, just because we got two extraterrestrial vehicles, even though they were not manned, in 42, okay?
Bill, I have a question, please. Did you ever get any reports on what these craft were like? Did you ever see any photos? Did you get any inside information? You say they weren't manned, so they were remotely controlled somehow. But did you ever get any word in your very unique position with the Navy about what the Navy dredged up out of the shallow water in the ocean? You wouldn't hear about what the Army got, probably, but what did you hear? Did you hear anything?
Well, actually, the Navy got it because actually they didn't shoot them. And it probably was the Navy that shot the one down, the small one. It was definitely a reconnaissance vehicle. It was had all types of things on it that were assumed to be recording information.
Hmm.
And that there was no vacuum tubes on it, no radio tubes.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, at that time, that's what all radio equipment was, our
sure.
communication.
Sure.
It was made up of radio tubes, vacuum tubes. And there was no wiring. And So many things were completely different inside of the one that the Navy got. And they had an extraterrestrial vehicle, even though it was a remote vehicle, in their hands in 42.
Mm-hmm.
And this is like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, in 51.
No, this would have been 1942.
Yeah, 42.
Mm-hmm.
And the Navy had one of the I got flight pay when I was in the Navy
right.
for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And flight pay means you have a requirement to fly so many hours every month. And in my particular case, they had me fly different kinds of not normal missions. So, for instance, we had PBYs in the Navy, which is a big two-engine flying boat, quite large.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would take the flight engineer's position sometime, and which was located in a vertical strut that held the wing onto the fuselage of a big flying boat. And there's two little windows, one on each side of this structure. And that's where the flight engineer actually was located, which is a terrible thing to do. But Lockheed built these big PBY flying boats. And so I would take that position, even though it was not a pilot's position, flight engineer. And so we would then take flights out from Naval Air Station San Diego and go out towards not Catalina Island, but San Nicolas and the other islands that we had facilities on. And so we would fly horizontal at 5,000 feet and then go to a slow dive down to 200 feet. Then climb back up to 5,000 feet, make a horizontal, and then take another dip back down. And this is for advanced radar stuff that we had on board, and then we were being tracked. So we would always fly these type of missions with that.
That PBY had such an enormous wing over the top of the fuselage. What was that like to fly in? Like a big,
it's very noisy.
I would think it would be those huge engines, and yeah, not too comfortable. I wouldn't think.
Actually, the stabilizer flying boats for taking off and landing were on the tips of the wings, which was very unusual.
Yeah.
So they fold down
right.
To land, and
they're floats. So, what they were.
Yeah, but we had the version that. Was a later version. It had a tricycle landing gear, which folded up into the hull.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't have to take off in the water.
Got it. Okay, go ahead.
Then I flew PB4Y2s, and this was a really long fuselaged B-24 bomber type thing.
With a single tail, a single vertical stabilizer.
Very high single tail, yeah.
Yeah.
And a real long fuselage, and that was a long-range patrol bomber.
They call that a privateer, right?
Yeah, right. And so I flew co-pilot on that one on all of my... Well, I flew first flight on one flight. But I flew co-pilot on all those many missions that I flew with that. And these, again, were research missions. We retired some of it. We flew out to China Lake requirements for tests out there, and then we would fly back to Naval Air Station San Diego. But what I'm trying to say is I flew all kinds of planes. I flew SBDs, dive bombers, PB4Y2, torpedo boat bombers, single engine, great big fat thing. And so I was very knowledgeable about flying. So when this Los Angeles event took place, I could pretty well judge a reflection of light from the lit up large vehicle that had, we had 8 searchlights on ours, and where it, one of the guys controlling the searchlight would come away from the big vehicle and pick up one of the smaller vehicles, which kept coming in either north or south of the big one. And you could then sometimes get a direct searchlight on it, and you can see it's a rectangle. It's not round. It's not cigar shaped. It's rectangle.
Huh.
And
right.
Then you could see sometimes with the amount of light that was on the bottom of the big one, even smaller ships getting side type light, and you see, you can say that was a cigar shape.
Wow.
And then there was another one, I didn't mention this, that was just a long beam type thing. Just a long beam. And it had to have been like a minimum of 40 or 50, maybe 60 feet. But it's just nothing but a beam. Wow. So what I'm trying to say is, talking to people afterwards, my dad spent actually 3 days talking to all these different people and getting different versions of what everybody saw.
Right.
So even he came up with, what's going on here? Why do so many people that are looking at the same event see different things?
That's a very unusual question. These people would be so fixated on that they wouldn't be making mistakes. That's for sure.
Right. And so at TRW Space Systems, later on, many years later, of course, mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. was one of the studies that they did.
So we're suggesting here that the ET craft, the large one perhaps, may have been the primary controller of all the others, or they were certainly in contact, was doing something, let's just say electromagnetically, because we don't know what the technology was, to impact people's minds in different ways. Maybe they were testing people. Maybe they were playing games. Maybe they were doing some serious alteration to consciousness. We don't know. But there was
That's
something
correct.
Going on. Am I right?
Absolutely. And that was the conclusion that TRW came up with. That and they, because at TRW, we were also heavy into mind control as a separate program.
Wow.
And so
mm-hmm.
they put these two things together, and they said that there was over 500,000 people who were mind controlled at that event.
So that was the TRW result of their inquiry to this, literally almost 20 years later.
Yes. Hmm. Because they were studying everything as far back as they could on extraterrestrial. And of course they had the Bible. There was a Bible in the study group. And that's a whole different story, but I'm just saying that they were very proficient in studying extraterrestrial. Okay, but back to this program. So my dad then, he talked to business associates too,
right.
Some of them which had watched the same thing, getting their opinions. He talked to the police. He went to the police department. He talked to them. He talked to some of the Navy people who were first ones they talked to was where you join the Navy. And so they have an office there in Long Beach. And he talked to them, and they referred him to several different organizations in San Diego there, or I mean in Long Beach there in San Pedro.
Mm-hmm.
And he had meetings with them. Mm-hmm. So he got to talk to both the active Navy and the retired Navy personnel that were in that area.
In the Long Beach area.
Mm-hmm. And so one of the fellows who was a lieutenant commander that he talked to estimated that there had to been hundreds of vehicles.
That's a massive invasion. That's a massive invasion.
That there must have been hundreds of vehicles, and a third possibility that the whole thing was staged by people that were not from this planet.
And they were making us perhaps see things that weren't there?
Very possible.
Because every report that I've read of the Battle of Los Angeles indicates one craft. That's it.
Okay, that's now, what I'm trying to say. Okay.
Yeah.
All I can say is what we saw.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Sure.
This is what we saw is completely different than what the newspapers said. And I didn't have anything to substantiate it, but some of the people who watched this event were commercial pilots.
Sure.
Who were not flying but lived in the area. And so the three that we talked to,
mm-hmm.
my dad primarily, I got to go with him on a couple of them, because I was real interested in it too. They said that there was definitely a minimum of 3 to 4 dozen vehicles. And the one guy was the one that came up with that version that I just said, where
right.
what was being done was that they may have had 2 or 3 dozen of the vehicles, but all they did was just fly east, go past the mountain range at the telescope there, Mount Wilson, go either south or go north, and then make another 180 out over the ocean and turn around and come back, as to justify far more vehicles than maybe the 2 dozen. But it's not like there was one spaceship which was round.
Right.
That's insane.
Hmm. Wow.
That's not what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And so, personally, I've talked to 6 or 7 people. Only one of them said that he and his wife and the kids saw at least a dozen, maybe more, vehicles. And so what we're seeing here is that, again, the public is not being told what really happened as far back as that sighting.
Sure. Yeah. I understand. Well, read the official version of it, and there is that one famous picture. There's also about a 6-second clip of black and white film. Now, we know the Navy and perhaps others were filming this at night. I've seen a small clip of this event at night with the searchlights and the white explosions. It was a silent film of the anti-aircraft rounds going off in the vicinity and directly on this big particular craft. So the government has footage of this. Bill, maybe you saw it. I don't know. But there clearly was a lot of film taken of this event because it went on for hours.
Oh, yeah. And one pass over of this kind of a vehicle, and forget that there was anything else, but just one pass, I can buy that as a normal sighting. But you don't have something of a vehicle parked for several hours.
Got it.
And then slowly leave. And what happened after he left? The anti-aircraft guns kept going off at these mm-hmm. other vehicles.
Wow. Yeah, wow. For sure. Well, I know that the government has, God only knows how much gun camera footage from the 1950s of our fighter planes chasing these things, trying to shoot them down in 53 and 54. That policy was dropped in 55, I believe, because they lost a couple of hundred aircraft and air crew. Didn't work to try to shoot these things down. They were getting, our planes were being brought down. So the orders were changed, and they went from bullets to cameras. And they began coming in with all kinds of film, which we've never been able to see. I mean, all they'd have to do is string together an hour of this stuff, put it up on television or on the internet, and the story would be finished. We're here, we're being visited, big deal, nothing happened, we can't do anything about it anyway, and here's what we saw. Why can't we be trusted with that? We have a right to that film. We paid for it.
But you're being lied to about everything else for
the name of the game.
2,000 or 3,000 years.
That's right. That's exactly right. Everything
and,
else.
In a way, we can't just blame Hillary and Bill and the Republican presidents. We can't just blame them because their minds are being controlled to do what they're doing. So, yes, their minds are heavier controlled than ours are, but then they're part of the program, and they're being mind controlled to be part of the program. And I think we have a lot to do about mind control.
Oh, yes.
We're not, wow. And I want to go back to this Los Angeles sighting.
Right. Hold on, Bill. Let me I'm going to do one short break here so our sponsors don't get too unhappy. So stand by. We'll come right back to the Battle of L.A. in February 1941. Conversation with Bill Tompkins, and we're going to go back to the 1941 February Battle of Los Angeles. Now, this is, I would like to ask, this was something that was still being talked about 20 years later at TRW, one of the most elite, above top secret black ops programs and centers in the world, if not the, it's right up there. But they were still trying to analyze this 20 years later, or 19 years later. And it seems to me that it must have been something of great interest to them.
Actually, it was. Jeff, it's that it's tied in with numerous other programs,
mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And essentially, it was accepted by TRW that at that time, this had to have been the largest sighting of some sort of vehicles. That had never been recorded. And it's not that you didn't see a lot of aircraft that flew up and tried to shoot them down independently, but this was not just one vehicle.
Right.
And the story that, if you look at the story that's in the paper, it doesn't make sense. Why did it park there for, say, 4.5 hours?
Exactly.
I mean, this doesn't make sense.
Right.
And it didn't. When we were down outside looking at the smaller vehicles going on, when we first came outside, uh-huh. when the anti-aircraft guns first started, okay, mm-hmm. we didn't see that big thing. That didn't show up for about 45 minutes. We'll watch these others.
Wow.
And incidentally, I didn't say this before, but some of them made like 45-degree turns. If they're heading direct east, they would 45-degree turn off to the left,
uh-huh.
go that way for a section, and then make another 45 still going east. And, like, he was in the wrong orbit, or he was in the wrong position, or, you know, maybe somebody, maybe there's nobody in it. Maybe most of them didn't have people in it, extraterrestrial people in it, mm-hmm. in them. But all of these questions and all of that information gets numerous research agendas at TRW. And so it was accepted that this was the number one. And obviously their total misunderstanding or their ability to put together all these different versions that people had convinced TRW that the audience here for this show was mind controlled. Hmm. That was fully accepted by TRW. There's no wow. question.
Wow. Very interesting.
There are other sightings where mind control is involved. But this is obviously the biggest sighting, and mm-hmm. there had to have been over 500,000 people watch this thing.
Sure.
Most of them stayed up all night
That's
and watched
right.
it.
Yeah. I have a huge section on my site that I put together. If anybody wants to read about this, you can just do a rents.com search and enter Battle of L.A. That'll do it.
That's cool.
I have pictures, articles from the L.A. Times, L.A. newspapers, the works. It's all there. Eyewitnesses. It's fascinating reading. And your contribution tonight is amazing because here we are. TRW is going through this, and they had countless sightings after that in 1942, beginning around 1947 Roswell, and moving through the 1950s. There were thousands upon thousands of sightings. And this one was still considered to be something important enough that they were working on it, as you say, in 1960.
And also, back at TRW again, this situation of the, not just the numbers of sightings, like you've just said, Jeff, that so many people saw different types of vehicles, and that, of course, who are they? Why did they come here?
Who do you think they were right now? We don't know, but what's your guess? Reptilians, okay, Nordics, who knows? Another group?
I would say Nordics, but I can't prove that.
Uh-huh.
But what I'm trying to say is that why did they bother? Okay. And once again, we have to go back to another bad thing that we have a reputation on. But we got this nuclear bomb thing. And so, yes, it did save a lot of lives to go over there and bomb Japan. But nuclear explosions ricochet out through the galaxy, okay? And so, again, TRW was, in studying the whole thing, was convinced that that rang the bells, and we had hundreds of UFOs show up here in short time after this.
Mm-hmm.
That we never had seen before. Okay, maybe one or two UFOs way back.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
But nothing like what happened, as you just stated.
Mm-hmm.
A few months after that, there was sightings everywhere. And so nuclear is a no-no out there as far as what
sure.
we
sure.
understood, even as far back as the secret think tank in Douglas,
uh-huh.
and certainly at TRW.
We're a renegade planet. We're really doing a lot of wrong and very bad things. Now, here's something. Frank wrote, and he said, there's something called AFSCM 375-1. He says it's an amazing story. Do you know about these documents? Did you want to talk about them? AFSCM 375-1. This came from the Douglas Aircraft secret think tank.
Yes. What that is I was involved in that, and actually I came up with a system. When we were working on designing large spacecraft carriers inside the secret think tank at Douglas, this is like 51, 52, that time period, war was over. And trying to put together a specification of how to design and then build in production, let's say, an intercontinental ballistic missile. Even simpler, a B-1 bomber, okay? There's all the things you have to do, and you have to, as a contractor, you have to come up with an answer to solicited proposals that go out for competition with all the different companies.
Sure.
And so then you come up with the design, and maybe your company wins the contract. Once again, way before any of those contracts ever came out, we had put together years before a program that would satisfy the military's requirement for that, maybe 4 years earlier. It's just like we were doing the program that, the Apollo program, we were doing that 4 years before NASA even existed inside the secret tank at Douglas. Okay. So this gets into an area where you list the design of what it takes to do this, and then you try to come up with how do you do it, and then where are you going to do it, who's going to do it,
right,
and all these requirements for, say, an ICBM or, say, a B-2 bomber, all right? And so this is thousands of pages of proposal documents. So this is all done on a vertical system where at the top of the page you have the thing you're going to do, and then you start listing from the top down to the bottom of the page all of the basic start things you have to do. Well, everybody else was doing that. And then I came up with, I turned the thing, you know, I turned it to horizontal. And so I then
like a put flow chart.
The first block on the left on a piece of paper that was 12 inches high and 10 feet long. So I broke this thing down into four major efforts. The concept phase, the definition phase, the acquisition phase, and the operational phase. So now I've got all these blocks, and none of the things in the second phase can be done until you did the first phase. So you have to block and come up with everything that's going to be required in that first phase before you can go to the second phase. So this ends up with hundreds of blocks with each one of the things that has to be done. And we go down to detail, to circuit boards, to the landing gear of the B-2 bomber, okay, to the elevons, the controls. Every one of these things are blocked from the start down through these four phases into final production. So essentially, we then changed every one of our unsolicited proposals back to the military, to the Navy primarily, with using this system. And the Navy was sort of impressed, but for some reason, the Air Force jumped on this thing and ran with it. So we then submitted the details of this to the Air Force, and that came out to be 375 Systems Engineering Systems Management. So if you're a contractor on any major, on every military program, you have to work with 375.
So, but that was Bill Tompkins, so they're still using your system today to block out any major project and carry it through from start to finish.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
And that came out of the secret think tank inside of Douglas. Wow.
Well, congratulations. That's amazing.
Yeah, thank you. But I'm just saying that things that we were doing were way ahead of everybody else in that tank. But remember, I took four separate packages. Flew it from Naval Air Station San Diego up to originally Douglas facility at LAX, and then to the main facility in Santa Monica. And I gave these packages to the top people in engineering at Douglas. So they were one of the principal of the four main organizations that got all of the first proposals. Now, remember too, that before I went there, Admiral Riccobata was given his first from captain to one-star admiral.
Right.
And 8 months later, he was given this job with the operatives.
Right.
And this is very interesting. They gave him another star, and before he even got to San Diego Naval Air Station, he went to Lockheed, he went to Douglas, he went to North American and over to the area that was not Northrop, but later it became Northrop, and which is Douglas El Segundo. Anyway, he submitted these packages to these four people and told them that his disseminator would be bringing the packages. He talked about the packages, and he told them that his disseminator of advanced research would bring the package to them within 5 to 6 weeks.
Uh-huh.
So he softened these companies into accepting these packages. And now, once again, I have to give Michael Salas, Dr. Salas, the big red dollar bill, because he went to Freedom of Information, and he found out that took place and many other things about this secret organization in the Douglas, in the Naval Air Station San Diego, where they have all these operatives over in Germany picking up the stuff that the extraterrestrials are giving to the Germans.
So Dr. Sala got some kind of confirmation through FOIA about this secret organization group that you were involved with. In other words, he got some data to validate it.
That's correct. And I'm just saying
that I'd like to see. I don't think I've seen that yet. Not that I need it, but it would be nice to have to add. So maybe we could ask Dr. Sala, if you're listening, Michael, maybe you could send that along. That'd be great.
Yeah. And I'll get with him and see if I can get that. Okay. But all I'm trying to say is that there was a lot of other information about Admiral Riccobata that we didn't cover in that first book, Selected by Extraterrestrials. Mm-hmm. And in our second book, which is like the inside of the secret think tanks, that's not finished yet. But in that, I'm going into detail about this other parts of this whole thing that I didn't cover well enough. And in the first book, I talked about, and I used the word naval intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's not quite right, but when we were trying to put the book together, we said it would be easier for the public to understand an organization which they knew about, which would be naval intelligence, to accept that those people are the ones that were doing this. Well, that wasn't quite the whole story, because Riccobata was not naval intelligence at all. He was operating separately at a level that was 10 times anything that any naval intelligence had ever done. Wow. He was working directly for the Secretary of the Navy, Forrestal, mm-hmm. who later became the first director of...
Secretary of Defense. Yeah.
Secretary of Defense. And so his job was not like anything that naval intelligence would have even conceived. And mm-hmm. this was all kept secret. And the point I'm trying to make here is that not one single document that I helped put together and then flew to all of these other secret organizations
right.
in the United States
mm-hmm.
was classified even confidential. There was no top secret stamp on any of the documents.
Right.
Everything was so far above.
Yeah.
Everybody knew this, but no documents
were
classified.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that fascinating?
It is. It is. Yeah, it is.
Wow. So Lockheed and the Northrop guys and the people over at American and the Douglas guys, they all put these together into what then became like the Skunk Works at Lockheed.
Mm-hmm.
But remember that the Skunk Works didn't exist. It was 4 years, almost 5 years before the Skunk Works even existed.
Mm-hmm.
But the people that were doing that kind of an effort before that existed got the package.
Well, I wish you had... one or two of those packages around right now. Wouldn't that be amazing to go through?
Yeah, I'd like to have it be worth $5.
Yeah, I'll tell you. Yeah. Well, it's amazing to hear these tales again, these stories, the inside of what was going on in 1950, for example. And I invite all of you to look at part 8 in the documents section. Under Bill Tompkins at the top of the homepage. That's the latest batch of material Bill has made available to the world. I haven't been able to go through it yet. It's something that you can sit back and turn pages and just be stunned. That this it gives you the actual inside truth about this way above top secret world that was going on in this country at that time. Nobody knew. Nobody still knows. I mean, they'll look. I've had people say, this was going on in 1950, 1951, 52, and they're stunned. Yes, but it did happen. And imagine where we are now. Just imagine. I can't.
And actually, it started in 1942.
Yep. Yeah.
You don't even have to buy the book. You can just, all you have to do is type in William Tompkins. You don't even have to type in aerospace engineer. Just plain William Tompkins and you'll get a stack of stuff. Now, I'd like to say that it is important, and I'm not trying to sell books, but it is important for everybody that's really interested in this
mm-hmm.
to get a hold of that first book.
Selected by Extraterrestrials.
Mm-hmm. What's in it? Is staggering, and I'm not kidding, and it's the sort of the basis for how this whole thing got started, and a lot about what's happening now, and people need to understand what's really going on, and like Jeff is saying over and over, get involved. Don't just read stuff. Get involved in this. We need every man, woman, and child on the planet to be involved in disclosure.
Right. We're in the minority here. We need to make it the majority, and that takes a lot of help from a lot of good people. And with Bill bringing this fascinating information, I've looked at these documents multiple times, and wherever I stop and start reading, it leads to something that is stunning. It's remarkable. That people were handling this kind of information and thinking, and that there was help from the Nordics. Remember, the Nordics were on the scene. They were mostly secretarial types, but they were giving answers, giving information, helping lead and direct programs and projects, you know, long before you'd even imagine it. This all went on during the 1950s and 60s, and it's tied into the Germans and the scientists and Paperclip, and we've covered a lot of ground. Thank you, Bill. I look forward to this, and I would like sometime to talk to you about Hollywood in the 20s okay. and 30s. That'd be really fun.
That's a big story.
All right.
Well, let's do that.
Thank you. All right. Take care of yourself.
Thank you, Jeff.
You bet. Yeah. Talk soon. Mr. William Tompkins, and there we are. And that's a Monday for you. And that means tomorrow we'll be right back Tuesday and catch you up to date with what's going on. Thanks for the pleasure of your company, and we will talk tomorrow.